TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports,
baby!
All the time. A division of Bell Media. TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. And now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live at tsn.ca/Winnipeg, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. And Richard Pollock is somewhere in the building. I believe he's trying to find a Diet Pepsi, but the machine may be sold out of Diet Pepsis. I'm not 100% sure what's happening there.
You know, Drew, we missed a week last week because we were at your wedding.
I missed 2 weeks.
You missed 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And
it's good to be back.
We were in the studio 20 minutes early, getting ready.
Yeah.
Richie's strolling in now.
Yeah.
He can't even show up on time.
Well, you know what? The guy's, he's a homeowner now. He's a big shot. Doesn't like to, you know, come on time, deal with us peons over here.
I was on time.
Well, where have you been for the last 2 minutes?
I was just speaking to Chris.
Richie, being in the building isn't on time. When the show starts, that's being on time.
I didn't get you your drink, Ezra.
That's true. You must have been delayed there. Okay, well, that's reasonable. Anyways, Richard, good morning. Ezra, good morning. Welcome to the program.
I can't wait. I saw the show plan.
Yeah.
As you put together, it's great. 12:15, review of Drew's suit. 12:30, the pace of his walk down the aisle. 12:45, how good the mint chocolate cake was at the wedding. 1 o'clock, the bourbon.
The bourbon.
We drank a lot of bourbon.
The bourbon was an important. Well, you know, you're in Kentucky. You have to drink bourbon. It's, you know, part of the local charm.
1 through 3 o'clock, Ezzy's snoring problem.
Yeah, well, that's something you can speak to throughout the program. How much that affected you? Jam packed show for you this morning. We're up on air until 2 o'clock, where we will break for the Rangers Capitals game one of that Eastern Conference semifinal. Coming up in about 15 minutes' time from the Washington Post and ESPN, Neil Greenberg is going to join us, longtime guest of ours, great insight into the Capitals.
Well, I got to say, Drew, quickly let me get in there.
Yeah.
I didn't love Boston this year by any means. I just thought there was something off about them. I thought Don Cherry did a good job explaining that the other day, just Washington was not engaging them. We'll talk about that in the review of the first round.
Right.
But still, throughout the season, having watched the Washington Capitals play, very surprised to see them in the second round. They're the real surprise team to me in the second round.
Well, they're the team that they played with such apathy through the first 82 games of the season. And they really did buy into whatever Dale Hunter was telling them for the first round.
And the goaltending.
Braden Holtby, of course, has been standing on his head. We'll talk about that throughout the program. Coming up at 12:15, head coach of the St. John's Ice Caps, Keith McCambridge, is going to join us. Ice Caps won their first round series 3-1. That was the margin of victory. Last night, they won in overtime to clinch the series. Keith McCambridge is going to join us ahead of finding out who their second round opponent will be later on tonight. So good for the Ice Caps winning there. I bet they have high hopes. The whole organization has high hopes for the Ice Caps this year.
I heard Zinger on the air last night. He was being interviewed during that broadcast, and they certainly do have high hopes.
Coming up at 1 o'clock this afternoon, analyst from Fox Sports West in Los Angeles, Jim Fox, is going to join us to talk about the Kings Blues. That gets underway 6:30 tonight here in Winnipeg.
Yeah, that should be the more interesting of the two Western Conference series, I'd say.
Yeah, well, certainly very much a chess match there between, I think, Daryl Sutter and Ken Hitchcock.
Obviously, two coaches that took over. Hitchcock took over earlier in the season, and Daryl Sutter obviously took over later in the season. Two of the best coaches around, and it will be a chess match. And the way the Los Angeles Kings played the Vancouver Canucks, I was completely shocked at the way they disposed of the Canucks. I know we're going to quickly go over our first round predictions and how we did.
Yeah.
But LA looked unbelievable. Dustin Brown played like a captain. Mike Richards played well. Drew Doughty played well after having a fallback year or a worse year than he had the year before. Jonathan Quick has been one of the best goalies, obviously a Vezina candidate. But the St. Louis Blues, you know, they've had time. They've had, I believe, more time off than anyone, at least a week off. And it is going to be an amazing series. a close one. And the way the Kings played, Drew, I like them moving ahead. They have really impressed me with the way they've played.
It's not like the Kings will be tired. They've had 6 days off. They beat Vancouver last Sunday.
Yep.
So, I mean, they'll certainly be, both teams will certainly be rested. Final guest coming up at 1:30, Matt Lachlan, New Jersey Devils play-by-play man on WFAN, is going to join us, talk about the Devils Flyers, which gets underway tomorrow afternoon.
Just thank God the Florida Panthers aren't in the second round.
You know, Richie, Florida Panthers, you know, they haven't won a playoff series since, I don't know, 1985. No, I'm just kidding. But they were in the playoffs for the first time in 12 years. And, you know, everybody was writing the Devils off. And good for the Devils. And Marty Brodeur played unbelievably in that final game, 40-plus saves. Adam Henrique got, obviously, that winner. We're going to talk to Matt Lachlan about the way Adam Henrique has played.
Really good
but
player.
But nobody's picking the Devils except me, I don't think, on this panel. And, you know, I think that the Devils are going to give the Flyers a little bit of problems, and they're not going to be as much of a pushover as I think people are saying that they're going to be.
Well, you know, we'll talk about that prediction. But, again, it's when you're dealing with an old Martin Brodeur, I mean,
yeah,
one of the best of all time, but an older Martin Brodeur.
He's 39 years young.
Yeah, and Ilya Brizglov, again, I mean, we can make our predictions, but who the heck knows? If you're dealing with eight save percentages in the 800s, then who knows?
True. If one of those goaltenders, you know, if they play, if one of those goalies gets hot and, you know, Brizgalov stays the same the way he is, I mean, you never know exactly. I mean, if Marc-Andre Fleury had, well, forget it. We'll talk about that throughout the show. We don't need to rehash that. Let's rehash this as we pride ourselves on doing here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're never ones to make predictions and then not throw them back in our face.
Yes.
So let's recap our first round predictions. We'll start with the Rangers-Ottawa series. Ezzy, you had the Rangers in six. Mm-hmm. Respectable guess. Mm-hmm. Richie, you win this one, hands down. You had the Rangers in seven.
I thought Ottawa would push them to the brink.
I had Ottawa winning that game in seven.
And Ottawa deserved to win that game, by the way. They
outplayed them.
But I thought the Ottawa would push the Rangers to the brink. The Ottawa is about two seasons away, but I'll tell you one thing. Paul McLean is a heck of a coach.
Mm-hmm.
And that can't be understated. He's my vote for the Jack Adams. I've talked about him all year, and I have much respect for Ken Hitchcock. But another thing is, you know, Erik Karlsson had one assist in the whole series. But you watch him play Game 7.
Yeah.
He's worth the price of admission.
Exactly, and I agree. Paul McLean is a great coach. Obviously, he was an assistant coach with the Detroit Red Wings, one of the best organizations. But Brad Richards, Marian Gaborik, where were they in that series? I mean, they won that series. And that top line was very silent offensively. The Rangers were lucky to get out of that series. It was definitely closer than I thought it was going to be. But, the Rangers are going to have to really step up their game. They're not going to beat the Capitals when Richards and Gaborik are not going. So, great series. And, you know, kudos to Richie for, getting that guess right.
Also, full credit to Kyle Kozier, another one of the Illegal Curve guys. He had New York in seven. Remus had New York in six, and Dave had New York in six. Moving on to the Florida Devils series. Well, everybody had Jersey. It was a matter of the games. I was the bold predictor here. I had New Jersey in the sweep. I had New Jersey in four. That obviously didn't come to be. Ezzy, you had New Jersey in six. Rich, you had New Jersey in five. Dave and Remus had New Jersey in six, and Kyle had New Jersey in seven.
Okay, so Kyle, two for two here.
Kyle's winning, doing well for himself so far. Boston, Washington, with the exception of Dave Minuk, who has been, I regret to inform everybody, been killed by Shane Knighty. Everybody else had Boston winning the series. Dave had Washington in seven. Okay, so Dave wins it.
Kudos to him.
Yeah, everybody else. I had Boston in five. Rich, you had Boston in five. Ez, you had Boston in six. And Remus and Kyle both had Boston in five. Philly and Pittsburgh, sort of a mixed bag here. Everybody had it going seven, except for Kyle. He had Pittsburgh in six. And then it was a matter of who was going to win that one. Rich, you had Philly in seven. Dave had Philly in seven. Remus had Pittsburgh in seven. And Ez, you and I each had Pittsburgh in seven.
You know, just quickly, that first-round series, I think was one of the best first round series in a really, really long time. And that's including Chicago, Vancouver last year. Philadelphia really, really surprised me at how well they played. I did not think that it was going to be easy, and that's why I picked Pittsburgh in seven. But Philadelphia showed, that they were an all-around better team. They wanted it more. Claude Giroux outplayed Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, Richie. And I know that, you know, Peter Laviolette saying that Claude Giroux is the best player in the world, people made a lot about that, but how can you argue and say that that's a ridiculous statement Whether or not you believe it's true,
I think he's the best player. If I had to pick one forward to start a team with right now, given concussions and everything else, I think I'd still pick Claude Giroux right now over Sidney Crosby.
15 points in the first round, outplaying two of the best players in the world in Malkin and Crosby. It's tough to argue with that.
Well, I mean, and given
Giroux did have a concussion this year too, though.
I know he had a concussion this year too, but with Crosby, I mean, it sounds like for the rest of his career, anytime he takes a legal hit,
fair enough,
you're going to be holding your breath a little bit, and that's not something. And you know, the same thing could happen with Giroux. You know, 10 games into the next season, but right now, you know, on whatever, April 28th, all things being equal, you're hard-pressed not to pick him. Moving to the Western Conference, the less said about the Vancouver-LA series, the better in terms of our predictions. Everybody had Vancouver. Everybody was wrong.
I think everybody, now that's correct, but I think everybody based upon Daniel Sedin being, when we made the predictions on the Saturday.
Yeah, we didn't know that.
We thought Daniel Sedin was going to be playing. And that was the report he was going to be playing. And then the next day, or 2 days later, it trickled out that he wasn't skating.
So had we known that
probably would have changed some predictions.
Well, hindsight being 20/20, would you, knowing that, if you had known that he wasn't going to play the first, was it three games of the series or two games?
Three.
If you had known that, would have you picked LA?
I mean, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I can go by, you know, what I did in, I who knows? I mean, that's completely hypothetical. To be honest, though, you weren't earning hockey pools and loaded up with three Kings when I found out Daniel Sedin wasn't playing, because I thought it was very much a 50-50 split. I don't know what I would have picked, but I thought it could go either way. When you take out Daniel Sedin, we've talked about this, when you take out Daniel Sedin, you're like taking away half of Henrik Sedin.
Yeah.
They're not as effective. And then, you know, Kessler hadn't been scoring this year. Where were they going to get scoring from? Their third line and fourth lines couldn't score. So if you have Sedin in there, then that masks it, because they control the puck a lot. They have good goaltending. The series would have turned out differently, I think, or at least in terms of length.
Richie, the Canucks definitely missed. It's undeniable they missed Daniel Sedin early in the series, and they weren't able to set the tone for the series. And LA got in front of them early, and you know, in my opinion, they couldn't push back. But I still would have picked Vancouver without Daniel Sedin. I mean, it's not a question of the Canucks on paper. The Canucks were the President's Trophy winners. They're better. Top to bottom, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And LA was able to neutralize everyone on their team. Henrik Sedin did nothing. Ryan Kessler did nothing. Dustin Brown completely dominated that series. That line dominant.
I think Mike Richards and the way he went at Ryan Kessler in the first game, which we'll ask Jim Fox about, was a predictor of things to come.
Moving to the Phoenix-Chicago series, me, Richard, and Kyle were the only ones to take Phoenix. Everybody else had Chicago. We all had Phoenix in seven. Of course, we were close, but no cigar there. You know, it was Phoenix in six.
Yeah, Chicago just didn't have it this year.
Yeah.
Granted, it went to five out of six overtime games, so it's a coin flip as Phoenix went to last night.
And if Corey Crawford makes a couple saves, he should have had both those saves in overtime.
I was saying this over the 2 weeks that we were off. If you're not going to spend money on goaltending like Chicago doesn't.
You shouldn't be
then
surprised.
Don't complain about having bad goaltending. That's the way it works.
You're right, Richie. And, you know, Johnny Taves misses 22 games at the end of the season. He comes back. He's not the same player.
But it's the same thing for Detroit. We're going to talk about that next.
Patrick Kane wasn't going. He didn't play well. Corey Crawford was not good. I mean, he did not play well.
They lost Hossa, too.
Yeah, we'll talk about that when we go through the postmortems coming up in a few segments. St. Louis, San Jose. Ezzy, you win this one. You had St. Louis in five. I had St. Louis in seven. Remus had St. Louis in four, and Kyle had St. Louis in six. Rich and Dave both had San Jose in six.
I wasn't buying the San Jose Sharks this year. Some people were saying that, you know, because they were a lower seed, that was going to be the case. But you know, the St. Louis Blues are a very good hockey team, and it doesn't matter that you know they were in a position that they haven't been in a while, and they played really well, and you know they've got their work cut out for them against LA starting today.
They're the favorites, according to Vegas.
Yeah, and the final series, Richard was the only one who had Detroit. He had them in seven. Everybody else had Nashville in either six or seven. We know that it was Nashville in five. So that was talk about that.
I didn't think Detroit was a cup winner.
Yeah,
and I thought Nashville is a darn good team that could go all the way. But I also thought, I mean, if you watch that series as well, Detroit had their chances. And they controlled the puck in every game.
Yeah.
Basically for the majority of the game. And they just came up short. And that's kind of how it works with Detroit. They want to give themselves a chance. But they need to do a real retooling. And from people you talk to, be very surprised if they don't make that both of Parise and Sutter. Suter, excuse me.
Exactly right. Yep. And we'll get to our second round predictions throughout the show as we preview the various series. Let's go to break. When we come back from the Washington Post and ESPN, Neil Greenberg is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are going to be hearing from Neil Greenberg of the Washington Post and ESPN momentarily. I believe Remus is hard at work on the other side of the glass getting him on the air. And we have the thumbs up.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
And let's welcome to the program from the Washington Post and ESPN, Neil Greenberg. Neil, good morning. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. Thank you. You know, we're sitting here, start of the second round coming up in a few hours. How surprised are you to say that the Washington Capitals are a second-round NHL playoff team?
I'm a little bit surprised. I like most, thought that Boston would be able to pull out the win. But, you know, look, I mean, this we saw the Washington Capitals buy into the team concept more than they have at any other point in the season. And they showed the mental toughness that was needed to get through. So while I am surprised, you know, I am optimistic for them for the rest of the playoffs.
Neil, Alexander Ovechkin led the Capitals in points in the first round, but how do you feel that Dale Hunter has used Alexander Ovechkin as far as ice time goes and situational play?
It's a head-scratcher. You know, Ovechkin has not been on the ice in what I would think would be crucial situations, that being when the game's tied in the third period, especially late in the third period. So it's been interesting to see. You know, from a non-coaching standpoint, when you have one of the best talents in the league, it's my opinion that you make the other team have to worry about them on the ice, not. You know, they don't need to be sheltered or anything like that. But, you know, it's tough to argue. It worked out, and, you know, Ovechkin seems to be buying into that. And, you know, they moved into the second round. But, you know, I think going forward, he needs to get as much ice time as he can, because he is a difference maker, for sure.
Neil, the play of two youngsters on defense, Carl Elsner and John Carlson, they've maybe played their best hockey of the year over the series against Boston. How impressed have you been with them, and how important are they going to be moving forward against Brad Richards' line in the New York series?
Well, I've been impressed with Elsner for pretty much the whole season. He's been a tremendous, tremendous shutdown defenseman. John Carlson, when they made the move to the man-to-man system under Hunter, The weaknesses in John Carlson's game became very apparent, especially when it came to turnovers. So when he was taken away from Carl Elsner, he seemed to struggle a little bit more. Hunter reunited them towards the end of the year. And like you said, they were great during the playoffs. They did an especially good job of keeping the shots from Boston to the outside. When they were on the ice, there wasn't a whole lot of scoring chances from Boston. So I think they'll probably do as good, if not a little bit better, against the Rangers' top line.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Neil Greenberg of the Washington Post and ESPN. Neil, any conversation about the Capitals' success in the first round has to begin and almost end with the play of Braden Holtby. A lot of people had high hopes for him, but to see a rookie goaltender coming in, you know, having not been really, the top goaltender except for the last, 10, 12 games of the season, how unexpected is the run that Braden Holtby's on, and do you expect it to continue against a Rangers team that doesn't actually have a lot of offensive firepower?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a surprise to me. He had a great regular season last year and seems to have picked up where he left off in the playoffs. Save percentage is 940 in the first round against Boston. And again, I think part of that was the defense did a great job of keeping the shots to the outside for Boston most of the time. But, you know, Holtby was solid throughout the series. I wouldn't say that he had a lot of 10-bell saves. But, you know, he was really solid for the most part. the thing about Holtby is there's two areas where the Rangers could give him some trouble. One, Holtby doesn't have great rebound control, and he gives up some juicy rebounds at inopportune times. But secondly, he's very aggressive in net, and there's some times where he's out towards the faceoff dot. Another time I thought maybe he was going to get some nachos in the middle of a play, just wandering out of the crease. So, you know, guys like Gabrick and Brad Richards will be able to take better advantage of that, I think, than maybe Boston's top six would. So, you know, I would have more faith in Holtby if he was able to tie those two things down. But there's no denying that he was a difference maker in the first round series for sure.
Neil, you touched on it a little bit, and obviously the playoffs are all about matchups, and the Boston Bruins are an extremely deep team, and Washington matched up against them quite well, shutting down a lot of their best offensive players. How do you think that the Washington Capitals match up against the New York Rangers for this series?
I think they match up a lot better. For one, you know, Ovechkin, like you said earlier, had 5 points going up against a Norris finalist and probably the Selke favorite in Patrice Bergeron, Zdeno Chara and Patrice Bergeron. So, you know, the Rangers don't have that level of talent. They perhaps have a little bit deeper blue line, but with Girardi paired with McDonough, mm-hmm. I think that we're going to see the Backstrom-Semin line have a good deal of success against someone like Mark Stahl, if that's indeed what the matchup is. So I think that the matchup from a top-to-bottom standpoint, the edge probably goes to Washington.
You know, when you talk about the Capitals, we talked about Alzner and Carlson before. When you talk about the other two pairings, you know, Green and Hamrlik and Weidman, and whether it be Erskine or Schultz, is it encouraging for Capitals fans to think about the fact that, you know, maybe those aren't the best shutdown pairings, but that the Rangers' offensive depth seems to kind of drop off after the first two lines?
Yeah, that's going to be especially crucial against the Weidman pairing. You know, Dennis Weidman, towards the end of the season, has not played his best hockey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he has been a turnover machine. He was on the ice for all but one of the even strength goals against that Boston had. So it's going to be that particular matchup that's going to probably cause the most heartburn for Caps fans. The Green-Hamrlik pairing, I think, is pretty solid. Hamrlik has played well, but, you know, Dale Hunter had Dennis Weidman in juniors, and it almost seems like if you look at the time on ice, the worse Weidman plays, the more time on ice he gets. And what that indicates to me is that Hunter is trying to get him to play through it, showing them that he still has confidence in him. But, you know, the Caps were lucky enough to get out of that first round largely on the play of Braden Holtby. If Weidman's going to continue to be on the ice for even strength goals against, I'm not so sure that Holtby will be able to make up the difference again against this Rangers team.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Neil Greenberg from the Washington Post and ESPN. Neil, one of the biggest points of emphasis that the Capitals looked to improve upon in this past offseason was their depth, especially their depth up front. Explains the additions of Troy Brouwer and Joel Ward, players like that, to really bolster the third and fourth lines of the team. You know, how important do you think those third and fourth line matchups are going to be in determining the outcome of this series against the Rangers?
Well, the Caps are going to need to have all four lines rolling. Jay Beagle stepped up big in the playoffs. You know, Joel Ward had a little trouble this regular season, but you know, much like last season, he got probably the most important goal of the series in Game 7. So, you know, I think what we're going to see is Ovechkin and Backstrom split up. So that'll give the Caps two scoring lines. And then you'll have a third line, which will probably be more of a shutdown line, and then your grinder fourth line. So, you know, I think that ultimately it's going to be the stars that shine. The Caps are going to need their top six to be better than they were in the Boston series. They got outchanced and outshot at even strength. So the Caps are going to need to have four solid lines, especially in the bottom six, to look to get another upset in the second round.
Neil, Dale Hunter left his job with the London Knights to take over for Bruce Boudreau earlier in the season, and the Washington Capitals, you could argue, squeaked into the playoffs in the seventh position. Now they've upset the defending Stanley Cup champions. They're in the second round. They're about to play the New York Rangers. And a lot of people would say Dale Hunter deserves a lot of credit for that. And as you mentioned, he's got a lot out of the third and fourth lines, the Matt Hendricks, the Troy Browers, the Mike Knubels, the Joel Wards. What specifically has Dale Hunter done to the culture and the identity of this team?
Well, you know, late in the regular season, he wanted to get this team very comfortable in playing one-goal games. And we saw in this past first-round series that that ended up being the difference. It was the first time that a seven-game series was decided by one goal. And, you know, as I alluded to earlier, this is the first time all season that you really saw the team buy into the team concept and also be mentally tough. You know, they struggled holding a lead. They struggled coming back from a deficit, but you saw none of that in the first round. I think, you know, Hunter, if anything, has made this team poised, smart, and, you know, Mike Knubel even said that it took almost all 60 games for this team to finally get on the same page and be able to execute the Hunter hockey system effectively.
Neil, you knew this question was coming. It's always the last one. Predictions.
Like I said, I think it's going to be the Caps in six.
Wow.
But that's going to hinge on the first game. I think that the first game of this series is going to be extremely important. The higher seed is 86-30 in second round series when they go up 1-0. So if the Caps can win today in the Garden, I think that they have an extremely good chance of winning the series. So I say Caps in six.
Neil Greenberg from the Washington Post and ESPN, thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Enjoy the series.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Take care, Neil.
Thanks, Neil.
Thanks a lot, Neil.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. Shortly past 11:30 in the morning, a big thank you to Neil Greenberg of the Washington Post and ESPN. Still to come on the program this morning, we are going to be joined by Keith McCambridge, head coach of the St. John's Ice Caps, Jim Fox, Los Angeles Kings analyst on Fox Sports West, and Matt Laughlin, New Jersey Devils play-by-play man on WFAN Radio.
I love it, Drew. We have three amazing guests coming up to follow up Neil Greenberg, who's always good. We've had on the show before.
Yeah.
This is awesome. We're back. You're off for 2 weeks, and we're just right back at it in the second round. Nothing could be better.
Nothing could be better. Nothing could be finer. Anyways, Drew, you can follow us on Twitter. Drew. Yeah, Richard?
Where's your ring?
It's getting sized. Yeah, it's getting sized.
Don't you get it sized before you put it on?
Yeah, my finger seems to have gotten fatter since we ordered the ring.
Oh.
Yeah. No, so that's why it's getting resized.
I don't wear jewelry. I wouldn't know.
I know. But one day you'll have a ring to yourself there. Yep. Don't worry about that. Anyways, you can follow us on Twitter at
a nose ring.
Yeah, a nose ring.
Yeah, an onion ring.
You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com, where Dave Manuk would not be very happy if I didn't mention that the Winnipeg Jets morning papers are posted each and every morning.
And again, Dave is now posting the Stanley Cup nightly recap. So we're, you know, transitioning to that every night. And also, we already posted our second round predictions. And now we're going to have daily St. John's Ice Caps news in addition to the St. John's Ice Caps news that we've had all year. So lots of good stuff going on the website.
No need to go anywhere else.
Exactly. www.illegalcurve.com, your one-stop shop.
New York and Washington.
We just had Neil on to talk about this series. I mean, you look at the series on paper, and you look at it, take away the regular season, because, I mean, we all saw how, how awful the Capitals played and how unenthused they looked all season long. And you looked how good the Rangers played, and, you know, they, you know, sacrificed to no end. The most interesting stat I saw coming out of the first round is that the Washington Capitals blocked more shots than the New York Rangers did in their first round
series.
They
were the top two, though.
They were the top two. Yeah. But the Washington Capitals, a team not known for their heart and their sacrifice, seems to have, for whatever reason, bought into what Dale Hunters has been selling.
Well, whatever reason. The reason is you don't play if unless you buy in. That's the reason.
But it took them this long to buy in. That's the part I'm surprised about.
Well, I mean, guys are programmed a certain way, Drew, and it takes a while to deprogram them. It still presents a lot of issues to me about the Washington Capitals. I still think there's a lot of flaws in that. I think
especially on defense.
Yeah, Neil's seen him play more than we have, and he picks them to win. I don't think they're going to win. And I'll tell you why. I still think the New York Rangers, and the risk with the New York Rangers is this. Because they play a certain style, you know, as a team, like you watch them and you watch how they play, the systems they play, and nothing special. They just play as a group, they play hard, and they play as a five-man unit. And, you know, you hear the term five-man unit all the time in terms of a, and I think it's a bit of a cliche, but it's really true in their case.
A cliche in hockey? That never happens.
But it's really true in their case. I mean, some teams don't play, they play as a five-man unit. Everything is together, everything is close by, they block a lot of shots.
They're an excellent five-on-five team.
Well, they have a terrible power play. The thing is with New York, though, is because of the way they play, they rely on Henrik Lundqvist, they block a lot of shots. Every game is close for the most part. Mm-hmm. So when you play close games, you run the risk of losing based on bounces going both ways. I still think that the Rangers, you know, with the top line of Hagelin, Richards, and Gabrick, it's going to be very interesting to see how that line performs against Alzner and Carlson. Now, I think the key to this series is going to be both ways, the second lines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you say that Ovechkin is on the first line of Washington, Ezzy,
yep,
then Semin and Backstrom would be the quote-unquote second line. You could argue that. But we'll say they're the second line for the purposes of this preview.
Okay.
And then you look at the Callahan on the second line with Stepan.
And now Chris Kreider.
Who's adding great speed to the roster, and they've trusted.
Is it Kreider or Kreider?
I think it's Kreider.
Played two games in the last series and played very well.
Yes.
Got a winning goal.
So you have that line, and then you have the Washington second line. What it is to me is, you know, how well does Mark Stahl play? Because Mark Stahl is on the second pairing of the Rangers now. How well does Mark Stahl play? And how able are Mike Green, not great defensively, not great along the boards, and Roman Hamrlik, slow, able to deal with the size, speed, and creativity of a Kreider, Stepan, and Callahan line? And that's a question that needs to be asked because, you know, the Rangers are playing Stahl with Strawman. Strawman's not good defensively. So that, to me, is the key to the series. There are many other factors, goaltending being one, obviously. But to me, that's the big matchup key.
Well, Richie, you talk about the New York Rangers and the way they play 5-on-5. And, you know, we saw them play the Jets in New York and obviously twice in Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. And I thought the Rangers were one of the most impressive teams against the Jets. And the Jets had all types of matchup problems. But you're completely right. The Carl Hagelin, Brad Richards, Marian Gaborik line was not a factor. And obviously, Hagelin was suspended for his hit on Alfredson, so he didn't play for half of the series. But, you know, I look at that line with Kreider, Stepan, and Callahan, an all-American line, another American exchange line, if you want to call it. But I look at the New York Rangers, and they're a bit of a different team. Henrik Lundqvist, you know, since the lockout, has been the best goalie. It's undeniable, and he should win the Vezina this year. And they're a bit of a different team. They're an extremely fast team on forward, but they're not on defense. And so they do try to get out of their zone quickly, and they do use their down low ability. Mm-hmm. And they are a little bit of a different team. And if you think about it,
the
way they got out of the first round, I mean, Lundqvist just doesn't let in bad goals.
No.
And the Senators did play very well against the Rangers, but the Rangers didn't make it easy on themselves. And I thought Lundqvist really was the star of that series. But you look at, you know, guys on their team, and, you know, Ryan Callahan I really like. But I agree completely. I look for big things out of that second line. You know, Kreider's coming in.
Hang on, let me jump in there. According to the NHL pronunciation guide, Kreider.
Okay, so I was right.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure. You know, it is a tough name to pronounce. And he's a college guy. You know, I think
years ago, right before the NHL draft in 2009, I believe he was drafted by the Rangers, I think 16th or 17th overall.
Yeah, mid-first round pick.
And he was very polished for an 18-year-old kid. He spoke well. He presented well. You can see how he could be a star in New York. But continue, Ezzy.
And you know, good for Kreider for being put in that position, you know, on the second line.
Yeah,
you know,
19th overall in 2009, exactly right.
Derek Stepan was arguably their best forward in that series. And people will remember him for how he played for the Americans in the World Junior Tournament. Very good player. But when you compare the two teams, I mean, we all picked the Capitals to be the best team in the East during the regular season. This isn't underdog. And I realize that Dale Hunter has them playing as an underdog, and Ovechkin wasn't fantastic, and Backstrom was basically invisible in the first round, didn't do much. But when you look at the matchups, I think completely it's going to come down to, can Alzner and John Carlson handle the top line, and can that second pairing, and I disagree a little bit with Neil Greenberg. I thought Hamrlik was awful in the first round. He's extremely slow, and the Bruins were taking advantage of Hamrlik a lot, and you could see it. But it's going to be tough. Carlson and Alzner, you've got two very young defensemen. When Dmitry Orlov was in the lineup for the Capitals, they had the three defensemen that were under the age of 23, I believe, and Orlov's not in the lineup right now. But I still like the Rangers to win the series for the simple fact that I think Richards, Gabrick, and Hagelin, that line wasn't going in the first round, and I think that line is going to very much determine the series, and they're going to score goals early, especially this is where home ice advantage matters in New York in the second round, and I think that's going to be too much for the top pairing of the Capitals to handle, a very young group.
Let me ask you this. Can Dale Hunter continue to really hold back Alex Ovechkin and limit his ice time like he did in the first round in this series? Can the Caps win with Alex Ovechkin playing the sixth most minutes out of forwards?
I don't think they can win with him playing the most, so I'm going to say no. But if it's any team that they can kind of match up against in a 3-2, 2-1 kind of games, this is the kind of the team to do that against.
Do you agree with the logic of playing him only this, the sixth most minutes of all your forwards?
No, I don't. I mean the best player on the ice should play the most. Period.
He's
a defensive liability, so maybe this is a lesson in the long term, and I understand that. But then they'll play him the third most or the fourth most, not the sixth most.
And again, keep in mind, Richie, against the Boston Bruins, it was a tired team. No Nathan Horton, Tim Thomas didn't play well, and they were able to win these one-goal games. Neil touched on it. Dale Hunter has convinced them it's all about defense. It's all about winning the one-goal games. And I don't think that's going to work against the Rangers in the second round. I definitely don't think it's going to work if they want to make a serious cup run here. I mean,
if they win this round, then they've made a serious cup run. As far as I'm concerned, then you've made it to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, based on the way they played this season, it's not going to work against a team like Philly. I'll tell you that much. The Capitals are going to have Ovechkin going. And yeah, of course they're going to break up Backstrom. He played well with Semin. Semin is just awful defensively. Semin, he gets goals, but he's such a one-dimensional player. It's unbelievable. So there are flaws. But you can't deny, Richie, that Hunter has these guys playing a gritty defensive style hockey. And it's working. And guys like Jason Chimera, Matt Hendricks, Jay Beagle, Troy Brouwer, they're all playing his system, and they're playing it effectively. And they won that series because of these guys. Ovechkin, sure, he got 5 points. It was spread out. He didn't play to his ability. 5 points for Ovechkin is nothing special. You expect a guy like him to get 2 points every night, but he has to buy into it. He's getting limited ice time. But I still think top to bottom, the Rangers have the advantage. Better defense, better goaltender.
Better defense, better goaltender. I think the forwards are probably a wash.
Well, this is what you predicted on the website, illegalcurve.com. Ezzy, you had New York in six.
Yep.
Rich and I, we both had New York in five. Anybody changing anything regarding their picks?
No. You can't change it. It's up on the website.
You're
one of us. You'll have a bite.
There you go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. I believe we're going to hear from Rick Maxwell Ralph in this commercial break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Coming up in about 25 minutes' time, Keith McCambridge, head coach of the St. John's Ice Caps, is going to join us. As most people know, we spend our pre-show meeting. Richie, you weren't there for it today. You were looking at your house. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Condo.
House. Home. Home.
Homestead.
Exactly.
Abode.
So
Ezzy and I
were sitting at a local establishment having our morning coffee and bantering as we do and disturbing the peace. As we normally do. Normally you go there on a Saturday and it's quite quiet until Ezzy and I show up. I was sitting there quietly. Then Ezzy.
Nobody left this time. Nobody left their seat or complained to the manager this time.
There were progress. So we're sitting there. We're having our coffee.
Okay.
And, we're chatting. And this
You had a wrap, too.
I'm sorry?
You had a wrap.
I had a wrap, too. That's true.
A wrap?
At Starbucks?
They have spinach and feta and, you know, spinach and feta and egg wrap. You know, a little breakfast. I have to get my energy up to deal with you guys for 3 hours. So we're sitting there, and this lady comes in and, you know, gets her coffee or whatever, and, you know, she's about to be on her way out the door. And, Ezzy, I'll let you take it
over. I'll take over. And, Richie, we missed you, obviously, this morning. So we're, you know, 20 minutes into a conversation.
Where is this going right now?
We're into a conversation. And
with her or
a
with
nice,
each other?
A nice woman.
With each other.
I believe her name was Natalie.
I thought it was Nicole.
No, it was Natalie.
Natalie? Okay.
Is I wrote it Natalie down. Or I don't know. Hopefully she's listening.
Why did you write it down?
So she taps me on the shoulder. I'm kind of sitting by the station. She goes, sorry to interrupt you guys. And she points at Drew and says, has anybody ever told you that you look like Jimmy Kimmel? And then also proceeds to say that Drew's voice and mannerisms reminds her of Jimmy Kimmel, who she's a big fan of. And I almost lost it.
What are you talking about?
And I almost lost it. And it might be because they're the same age. But I actually completely lost it. And it was hilarious because now that I think about it, Drew does a little looks a little bit like Jimmy Kimmel.
I don't see it personally myself. I mean,
maybe a little bit.
Like, I mean, I wasn't insulted necessarily. I think, you know, wealth. Obviously, I assume she meant because I'm so wealthy. I look like Jimmy Kimmel, who's also wealthy. That's the only comparison I could come up with, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
At first, I thought she said Jimmy Carter.
Anyway, so that was the... It never fails. There's always something that happens in the morning that keeps us on our toes. And Natalie or Nicole, whatever your name was, thank you for the compliment, I guess. But nobody else quite sees the Jimmy Kimmel in me.
No, but you are very... You're the host, and you have that aura about you that you
she
are...
She know you host
you are
the radio
larger
show?
Than life.
We explained to her, after she made the comment and we stopped laughing, you know, we explained to her, turn on the radio, you know, starting at 11 o'clock, and you'll hear a... You'll definitely hear a mention about this story, probably for the next... At least 10, 12 weeks.
It's hilarious.
Let's talk about the Blackhawks and the Canucks, who were both eliminated in the first round. Obviously, the Canucks had higher hopes based on the regular season than the Canucks did.
You were never in on the Canucks.
Well, I was never in on the Canucks, and I said that the regular season was going to be bad, but I was wrong. It was their playoffs that were really horrendous. Where does the Vancouver Canuck organization go at this point? It sounds like Roberto Luongo is probably on his way out. Whether it's his decision or their decision or Corey Schneider's factor in there.
Let's get into that quickly because I think that is a complicated and a complex scenario.
Very complicated.
Because who will take on his salary? Drew, why don't you explain?
There isn't one team that you can make an argument that will make a move and welcome that salary when you have 10 years left, and I believe there's something like $60 million left on that salary.
It's
and the salary
cap
goes, and the cap hit goes down towards the end.
No, the cap hit doesn't go down. The actual salary paid out per year goes down dramatically, but the
cap hit always stays the same.
The cap hit always stays the same. I mean, the cap hit is, you know, $5.33 million a year. And for the from 2012-2013, so starting
2022,
so it's a 10-year deal. He's still got on it, and he gets paid
10-year deal. Drew, how old is he?
How old is he
31?
Now? He is 33.
It's a 10-year deal at 5.3 cap hit. He's 33 now. Goalies seem to age a little bit better than other players do, mind you. I believe based on what I've read, but in any event, he's not in his prime anymore. He's at a 5.3 cap hit. He has appeared to not be able to deal a lot with significant pressure scenarios, at least in terms of the media, and he seems to let things get to him. He's not like the Eddie Belfour. Everybody can take a hike. I don't care about anything. He's not like Eddie Belfour.
He can't
that way.
Put his two until he puts two Stanley Cup rings in his ears.
Right.
He's going to hear the cat calls and the comments.
And he's going to. I don't know if he takes it a little bit too personally. In any event, what we have to do is you have to look at who needs a goaltender. And you really whittle it down to like four to five to six teams.
Yeah, I
wrote the whole when I did the whole Andre Pavlik contract negotiation piece. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a pending RFA as of July 1. There were only 5 to 6 to 7 teams, some of who may not need a goaltender, who are in the picture. Now you're trading for a goaltender here. So what you have to do is analyze. Okay, there's a goaltending need. Now supply demand. Is there other goalies available? Well, how much better is Luongo than, say, a free agent goaltender, say, like Thomas Vokoun? You may think he's a lot better, but is he 9 years better? If you could sign Vokoun for 1 year at $2 million without much risk, is it that much better? So do those teams...
Or never mind Vokoun, or Jonathan Bernier,
exactly.
Or Anders Lindback.
Or Corey Schneider.
Yeah. I mean, that's the. I mean, those.
Or Michael Nuvert. What if Hopi becomes a goalie there? Are there so many better, more cost-effective options? Mika Kiprusoff with 1 year in his deal.
Yeah.
Right? It's 1 year in the deal left, I think? I think it's 1 year left in his deal.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So, I mean, you want to pull that up, Drew?
Mm-hmm.
There's so many options. And out of all those options, and Luongo is good. I think he's really good. But out of all those options, are you going to tell me that people are going to say, I don't want any of those. I want the 10-year deal of Roberto Luongo at $5.3 million.
Kiprusoff's got 2 years left.
And in addition...
But the money is like literally nothing.
2 years, the cap hit is 5.8.
Right.
The cap hit this, it's the actual salary this year is $5 million.
What's next year?
Next year, $1.5 million. So it drops dramatically.
So you're paying out less money now. The cap hit is obviously
your,
always...
Your cap hit is almost $11 million and your actual salary is $6 million.
Never mind the pending CBA. What if the cap gets brought down again? Who knows? What if... there's many possibilities here. Do you want to take on that huge contract, Ezzy? So there's many questions to take, factors to take into account. It's not that simple. And I mean, at least if you're going to give away Luongo, because you're going to give him away, I would think that you would have to give up, take back a contract like a Mike Komisarek, something like that, a couple, maybe two of them, bad contracts to take away Luongo. I don't think you're going to get anything in terms of value for Luongo.
He also controls his own destiny. He's got a no trade clause.
You're offering a guy a 10-year deal. How do you give him a no trade clause?
It doesn't make any sense that you give him a no trade clause also. So I mean he controls where he wants to go. If you're Roberto Luongo, I don't see why you want to go to Toronto. You can't cut it. The media bothers you in Vancouver. Toronto's not going to be any friendlier.
I think Toronto's actually an easier market than Vancouver. Vancouver fans just seem angry.
They certainly seem angry. Look, it might be easier, but it's not an easy market where,
where it's not like they've done anything in the past 10 years, right?
Obviously. So, I mean, you're Luongo. You get to control where you're going to go. I mean, all this talk about Tampa Bay. I'm sorry, but Steve Yzerman seems like a pretty shrewd general manager.
That's right.
I don't see him wanting to be in the Roberto Luongo business for the next 10 years at $5.3 million a year on the cap hit.
And there's another huge problem that Mike Gillis is going to run into, Richie, and this relates to the article that you wrote about Andre Pavlik and how much he's going to sign for. The goalie landscape has changed, and the perception of goaltenders and how much they're paid and how many years you want to give a goaltender has changed. And that's going to be difficult for Mike Gillis. He's not going to Toronto. And I think that the handful of teams that are going to be interested in Roberto Luongo, seriously, might even be one or two teams. It's going to be extremely difficult. And the problem is, in that first-round series against L.A., Luongo played well in the first two games. So, and everything points to Luongo being jettisoned out of town. But it's going to be extremely difficult for Mike Gillis. When you look at a guy like Roberto Luongo, of course he's a great goaltender, 33 years old, and a few teams could use him. Tampa Bay could definitely use him. Toronto could definitely use him. But when you have 10 years left on your contract, are you going to? You have to make a serious commitment to a guy.
If you're Vancouver, if you're the Vancouver Canucks, and don't you want to, instead of trading Luongo, don't you want to put the for sale sign on Corey Schneider and really acquire? You're going to get a lot more for Corey Schneider than you are for Roberto Luongo.
Drew, absolutely.
But you've got a
very, very frustrated and angry Roberto Luongo. Now you've gone to Corey Schneider.
Can you win with Luongo there? Like you got you one game within one game of the Stanley Cup.
But can
he go back there?
We don't know.
Market, does he want it? Will he be motivated? Will he be happy to go there? Will his teammates have trust?
I don't think he's happy at all right now.
I don't think so either. Do his teammates have confidence in him? There's so many factors here. I don't disagree with that logic, Drew, for sure.
It wasn't his fault for games 1 and 2.
Absolutely not.
No. It wasn't his fault for games 1 and 2. I mean, if you're, I heard Don Cherry on this, and I typically don't agree with Don Cherry.
Thursday?
It was Thursday when he was talking about Boston.
He was bang on. I thought he was bang on the entire segment, by the way. Go ahead.
But, sorry. I mean, Don Cherry said, give him where he's the clear-cut number one. There's nobody behind him. Schneider's not pushing him. He's your number one goaltender. What are you going to do? You're going to trade Luongo. You're going to give Luongo away because you're not going to get anything back that you really want. It's not like you're getting cap space back in return. There's no cap space that's coming. It's not a salary dump. Nobody's going to take on that contract.
Mm-hmm. What about New Jersey just tossing it out here? What about New Jersey wanting him to just take over the reins from Brodeur?
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, they're a team that has always invested
in... Pure speculation, but hey, what about that?
And really, the issue here is...
Do they want to go from not a Hall of Fame goaltender to nothing, or do they want to maybe just take another one who could be a Hall of Famer?
No, it's a good idea, but what
you have
done,
you have... What's his name? You have...
Parise.
No, they have Parise they have to sign, but I'm saying their goaltender, the Canadian...
Wedgwood.
Yeah. They have Scott Wedgwood, who's a couple years away.
Yeah, he definitely a couple years away.
He's a couple years away. But do you want Roberto Luongo for the next 10 years? He can't... The contract is too long for him to just be a bridge to somebody.
I'm not saying I'd take on that contract,
Devils
Drew,
are on the short list.
But you look at Marty Brodeur, he's at a 5.2 cap hit. What's Luongo?
5.3.
Seems almost seamless.
It's the bridge that's too long. You can't bridge...
I wouldn't take it. I'm just looking at scenarios that it may work in.
Well, that's why I think...
I personally wouldn't take that contract on, but I'm looking at scenarios. Maybe it does. They've had Brodeur forever. They like to have a sturdy goaltender.
I think it's a very viable option. Quickly, Drew, before we go to break.
We can come back to this in the next segment.
What happened?
We talk about Chicago still.
Yeah, we
still
have Chicago
in Vancouver. And we've been doing the show for over 3 years now, and we've been talking about Corey Schneider since he left the Manitoba Moose. He was an excellent goaltender. What happened was they had Corey Schneider waiting in the wings. And they played him a little bit, and then this year they played him more, and then they lost confidence in Luongo and played him, and now they've basically cornered themselves, and now they have to get rid of one of those guys. And if you're talking about trade value, Schneider's trade value is way better. So I agree I think they've picked Schneider. Schneider's their guy.
On a much lesser extent, this is Yaroslav Halak and Carey Price all over again.
Absolutely.
You trade Halak, you trade Schneider when his value is the highest. You get a lot. You can get a fair bit back for Corey Schneider. You can get a fair bit back for him, and you ride Roberto Luongo.
You could get a first round pick and a good player for Corey Schneider right now. That's how good he is.
It's something that I think they should consider more than just putting for sale sign and selling cheap on Roberto
Luongo. I think it's something
Luongo.
They probably will consider. The problem is if Luongo's that unhappy.
That's the question. You don't know if that relationship can be resuscitated or not. Let's leave it there. When we come back, much more. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Coming up in about 10 minutes, head coach of the St. John's Ice Caps, Keith McCambridge. Still to come, Jim Fox, analyst for the Los Angeles Kings on Fox Sports West, and Matt Lachlan, New Jersey Devils play-by-play man on WFAN Radio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. That's Ezra Ginsberg. That's Richard Pollack. I'm Drew Mindell.
I know who I am.
I know.
I also know who I am.
Just reminding who you guys are in case you get confused.
The listener?
You guys, in case you guys get confused. I know how you guys can sometimes get confused. Staying with the Vancouver Canucks before we move to the Chicago Blackhawks,
sure.
Do you think that any of those, of their top six forwards... There's some talk that Ryan Kessler might be on his way out. Do you think there's any...
Where's that talk coming from?
There's a columnist in Vancouver who opined that.
Who is that columnist?
I'd have to check. I can look it up real quick.
And what was the basis? I didn't catch that.
I'm not 100% sure. There's just talk about... Let me rephrase the question. Do the Vancouver Canucks need to make changes to their top six forwards?
Maybe add a fifth or, a second line right or left winger. The David Booth scenario didn't work out as well as they wanted to, but a top line of the Sedins and Burrows and then a second line with Kessler down the middle doesn't seem too bad to me. Again, I don't think that's necessarily the issue. I think they probably need some help in the back end. And maybe a little more depth scoring now in the Hodgson deal. So, maybe they have three needs, but they're not huge needs, guys. Edler didn't play great. I still have faith in Edler. I think PX is a little bit overrated in terms of his all-around game. I think he's a good defenseman, though. You could use, you have Dan Hamm, who's there. Maybe another guy in the top four. So a top four defenseman. Maybe a top six winger. Now, those aren't easy to acquire. But
especially a team that has absolutely no cap room.
And no prospects, really.
True, it was Ian McIntyre in the Vancouver province. And, in the article, we should be clear that he said he's not campaigning for that, but he said it might not be ridiculous. And to be honest with you, I don't think that the Vancouver Canucks have to do much. Like Richie said, they could use a top six defenseman, but your team
top
is...
Top four.
Pardon me, top four, more specifically.
You probably want to take Sal out of there at this point.
Well, Salo's a UFA.
Your team is still excellent. This is the team that won the President's Trophy. This is not a team that's going to retool here.
Well, this is the thing. You're going to put Ballard in the top four? No. Based on the way they played yet, and Vino doesn't like him. So maybe that's somebody you amnesty if the new CBA allows for that. In any event, you have Bieksa, Ham, who's Edler. You want another top top four defenseman, preferably a right-handed shooting defenseman. That's what you want.
Absolutely. They need somebody with more offense than better defensively than Bieksa. Bieksa's, you know, a good power play guy, but absolutely. And I mean, you know, this is a team, you know, David Booth they acquired, he's going to be back next year. You know, Burrows will be back next year. Sammy Paulson, I believe, has to re-sign if
he's a UFA.
He'll have to re-sign. I would re-sign him. I thought Paulson was really good at getting
the, Sammy Paulson's a UFA.
Mason Raymond's an RFA. Yeah.
That's about it.
Raymond's coming back. They've invested a lot in him.
And Schneider's an RFA.
Zach Cassian's a guy that, you know, he's a grinder. He'll be on one of the bottom lines. But, I mean, Chris Tanev I like. And the Canucks are going to be good next year. The main issue.
So you're chalking it up, the first round defeat, to more of an aberration than anything else?
No, Daniel Sedin and the rest of the team didn't play well. Ryan Kessler didn't have a good series, and they didn't. I mean, you talk about the Chicago Blackhawks, Vancouver Canucks, both teams played very poorly in the first round. They didn't play well.
I have some concerns with Vancouver in terms of other teams, you know, retooling, getting better. And I don't know if they can get that much better. And I wonder about that.
Well, let's talk about one of those other teams, and that's the Chicago Blackhawks. They also went out in the first round, victims of the Phoenix Coyotes. You know, it's been a few years now since the Blackhawks were, you know, the Stanley Cup champion. Since they've been the upper echelon in the Western Conference. Now, the last 2 years they finished bottom four, in the West. What's that team's biggest problem right now? Is it goaltending?
That's a factor. I think. Grit. They need more grit. I think they need a little bit more in terms of defined roles. Some of their players, some are role players, frankly. So you need grit, role players, and you need some better goaltending. But in terms of the core, Kane, Taves, Hossa, Sharp, Boland. You probably want another center because you want to play these guys. Ideally, you want to play Kane. Hossa, I know they're still talking about Kane and center, but Kane, Hossa, and Sharp on the wings. You want Boland to be a tremendous third-line center, Taves to be your first-line center. If you get a serviceable second-line center in there, maybe some more role players who are easier to find than skill players. You know, do you want to ride the goaltending? You probably still ride Crawford, but they'll maybe consider something else. You have a nice top three on defense, and a guy like Letty, is improving. They've expressed an interest in bringing Oduya back. I don't know what the price will be. But I don't see the huge issues here with this Chicago team. I see this team as still needing a little bit more in terms of depth. They have a lot of the same thing to me. And I think that it was guys who could contribute 10 to 12 goals but couldn't do a ton else. And I think they need to get away from that and a little more of a specialized roles. And I think if they can do that, they'll be just as dangerous. More dangerous than they've been the past 2 years, frankly.
If you had a healthy Jonathan Taves going at 100%. And at the beginning of this year, Jonathan Taves was the MVP of the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of this year, he was playing unbelievably. Patrick Kane, you know, with the exception of maybe, you know, Patrick Sharp, you know, everyone had a down year. And I mean, the problem I had with Chicago this year is you bring in Johnny Oduya, who they acquired from the Winnipeg Jets at the trade deadline. And then you had Nicholas Jarmelson was bad all year, and he carried over to the playoffs.
He's got
to
be better, yeah.
You're right. I mean,
Keith and Seabrook weren't great at it. They wore down this year.
Right.
They played too much.
Well, Keith and Seabrook, you know, you mentioned those two, and you know, you used to think Keith Seabrook is sort of in the same company as Weber and Suter.
Yep. Weber and Suter proved this year that they're better.
Yes. I mean, Keith and Seabrook seem like they have plateaued since the 2010 Olympics.
I think when you're talking about classes, I think Seabrook's in a class. It's like if you're talking, I think Keith and Weber and Suter in 1A and Seabrook's a 1B, frankly.
Doesn't have the offensive skills the other guys
have. Right. I think he struggles a little bit. It's really, really, really top players. But I don't necessarily think a huge setback. I think they're a little bit overplayed, Drew. And they're a little bit tired. And that's from a ton of ice time and they're playing Olympics and they're playing playoffs and they're playing Stanley Cup. They've logged a lot of time, and I think per game basis this year they logged too much time. I think you scale them back, you get another top four guy in there, whether it be Oduya, somebody else, and I think what you do is you insulate them a bit more, and if you play better throughout the season, you can rest guys near the end too. So I don't have huge worries about them. They're both very capable.
I agree. I think Chicago will be back next year. I'm going to, you know, even go a little bit further ahead. I think Chicago will be, you know, back as a top seed in the West next year. But, Rich, you're right. And I mean,
I think it's easier for Chicago to retool than Vancouver.
Yep. And you look at who they brought in as their third line center, Brendan Morrison. That did not work out. They need to bring in a better.
But why did they think that
third
would work
line
out?
Center? That's what about a Paul Gostad to bring in Chicago?
See, that's exactly what
somebody like that.
A guy who fills a role, yeah. A guy who can win faceoffs, play big, play tough. That's exactly the kind of guy they need.
I like Paul Gostad as a potential Winnipeg Jet.
Absolutely, Gostad's terrific
Fargo
hockey
boy.
Player.
Yeah,
he's doing Fargo. He's doing fantastic for the Nashville Predators, but the Chicago Blackhawks. Again, I mean, and this has been talked about since both of the teams were knocked out. Corey Crawford, you got to get a better goalie. Corey Crawford's a backup goaltender. He's not a good enough guy to be.
I wouldn't necessarily argue with that. He's not great, but they've taken the course of spending very little on their goaltending. I don't know how much they go off. You know, maybe they do react and get somebody else. But he still has 2.66 left for the next 2 years.
That's right. He's not free.
No, he's not a fortune. He's not like a $5 million guy that you can't really put anywhere. You could bring in another goaltender. Now you have Emery on the books too for next year.
Yes.
So I mean,
and Emery is but at 1.15.
But you're going to bring in a third netminder. When they signed Emery to the extension there, it seemed to me that they were at least looking to keep Crawford unless they make a trade.
Well, it seems like they were pretty set with those two.
I like Quenville. I know they had trouble in a number of facets of the game this year. They brought in Barry Smith to help out, and there were some questions of undermining his authority. I do like Joel Quenville as a coach. I don't think he suddenly lost it. I like the emotion he displays behind the bench. But if you listen to their post-mortem and listen to their meetings, one thing you heard was that they need to focus on chemistry. I think, again, that fills into roles. And guys know their roles, and there's certain types of players in every situation. You work better than 12 guys who essentially have the same skill set.
Let's leave it there. When we come back on the other side, Keith McCambridge, head coach of the St. John's Ice Caps, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Shortly past 12:15 in the afternoon, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome into the program the head coach of the St. John's Ice Caps, Keith McCambridge. Coach McCambridge, welcome to the program. How are you this afternoon?
Very good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. We got to start with last night. You guys took care of business on home ice after splitting on the road. You came back to St. John's, won both games to win the first round series. You know, talk about the series. You know, how was it to win the first ever playoff series for the St. John's Ice Caps?
Well, it was exciting for the city, obviously, for the players also. This team has been a team that down the stretch we added in some injured guys, added in some guys through trade. So we really didn't get our group together until the last three games of the regular season. So it's been a matter of really pushing along the group here, making sure they become as familiar as possible with each other. I felt the two games down in Syracuse, I thought the second game we were better than the first, although we didn't get the results we wanted in the second. And as this series went on, especially with last night's performance in the second and third, you can definitely sense the group starting to get that identity that you need this time of year. So really important and really good for this organization and for the team to get past this first round, have a chance here to galvanize the group back together and push on into the second round.
Keith, obviously Winnipeg's Derek Meech scored the overtime winner last night. How important has his addition been to the hockey club late in the season?
It's been very big. With losing Mark Flood early November, with him making the club in Winnipeg, been a void on the back end, some really good pieces. But anytime you lose a player like Mark Flood, it's a big hole to fill. So having the addition of Derek Meech, we had him for that short period of time before he got injured, but to have him back here for the playoff push has been a very huge benefit to this team. His poise on the back end, his leadership on the ice, in the room, you can definitely tell that he's played in some high-pressure games. You can tell that he comes from that National Hockey League environment where he knows what it takes to win this time of year. So his game, again, is one that's growing and growing every single game, and he's been one of our best players, if not the best.
Keith, you talk about Mark Flood being called up to the big club. Two players who were called up to the big club a couple of times this year, Patrice Cormier and Spencer Mihajluk. Did you notice any difference from upon their return to the Ice Caps after spending some time with the big club here?
Well, I thought they had a little bit more speed. Having a chance to play that many games up in Winnipeg at the level that the National League executes at, I thought their process in the game was quicker. I thought their skating was a couple steps quicker than before they left. But they have that added benefit coming back where you can sense some more confidence in their game, sense the ability and confidence to make plays in certain areas. So Anytime those guys get that chance to go to Winnipeg, play in some key situations and just get a couple minutes here and there, they definitely come back with a little more belief, a little bit more jump in their step. So for both those guys and for us, it's been good.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Keith McCambridge, head coach of the St. John's Ice Caps. Keith, you know, having taken care of business last night, you obviously don't have to play in that do-or-die Game 5 that was scheduled for tonight. Instead, you get to sit back and watch as the Hershey Bears and the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins will play each other. Winner of that game tonight will meet you in the second round. What challenges do both of those teams bring to the table in terms of scouting and looking ahead to the next series?
Well, Wilkes-Barre brings, they have good goaltending. They got some big body defensemen that defend really well. They play at a real fast pace. The games we played against them during the regular season have all been real strong games between both clubs. So definitely a challenge there. Hershey is obviously missing a couple pieces with guys with like a coin, Holtby being up in Washington. But again, as you guys know, that organization, that club in Hershey, some real older guys that realize where they are in the season, realize what it takes to win games in the playoffs. So both teams have different challenges, and both teams will be they'll definitely be make for a really good second round.
Keith, Mark Scheifele's played in two games for you in the playoffs here. How do you think he's played in his first two games for the Ice Caps?
I liked his games. I liked him a lot. I thought last night he was really good for us. I thought the first game he was strong. You know, he fell as the game wore on. He got better and better. I thought last night he made some really good plays. He plays a regular shift with Rosa and Carl Klingberg on his other wing. I like his poise with the puck. I like the his awareness of where the where his wingers are going to be on the ice to place the puck. Some definite real good skill set out of him, and he's just a really good kid. He comes to work every day. He's professional. He puts in all the extra time on the ice before and after practice and just enjoys playing. So he's been a real nice addition. Obviously, we saw him in Winnipeg. I had the opportunity to coach him in Penticton at the Jets rookie camp. So it's been nice to have him in the lineup, nice for him to get some more experience at the pro level and be a part of this right now in the playoffs. So both his games I've been really impressed with.
Jets fans had a chance to see Paul Postma play in the exhibition season and a little bit of a glimpse during the regular season. According to many people, he's progressed significantly since that time, especially defensively. Can you maybe talk about that progression, Keith, but also his play so far through the four games of the playoffs?
Well, at the beginning of the year, the offensive side to Paul's game was always there. You know, his reads on when to jump into the rush, you know, his ability to get the pucks in net was something on. He possesses a really good shot. That part, the offensive side, I feel, has even blossomed even more. But always the question with Postma was, how is he in his own end? How is he net front? How is he in the corners? And there is an area that we really wanted to stress with him as an organization, as a coaching staff down here, and he's been a lot better. Where before, you know, you might have to make sure he's not in different situations at different parts of the game. The defensive side, he's now out in key minutes of a game if you're defending with a lead. You know, he battles again net front. He's a big man. He's gotten stronger. The defensive side, which is the part that really needed to develop, I think, has definitely made some huge strides this year. And again, a guy that played two games out of the last three after being off for 4 weeks with an injury, his game has definitely grown here too. It's gotten stronger and stronger through this first round, and that was a concern for us because any type of best of five percentages are definitely against now the favorite team, the higher seed, which was ourselves. But we wanted to push to get through this first round because we knew we had guys like Postma, guys like Brock Trotter, guys like Marco Rosa, Ray Sawada, Derek Meach, all guys that we added that were coming in from injuries here the last three games of the season. So they've all gotten their game underneath them, gotten better as as this series went. So now a chance to get a couple days rest and then again get back up to a high level here for the second round.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by head coach of the St. John's Ice Caps, Keith McCambridge. Coach McCambridge, this is obviously your first time being a head man in the AHL. You have previous head coaching experience and, of course, previous assistant coaching experience. What's it been like to make the transition from an assistant coach come playoff time to being the head man where the pressure definitely is ratcheted up as you go as the second season begins?
Well, it's been really good. I've had a chance to work with some really good head coaches. You know, when I was assistant coach, obviously Claude Noel, who's in Winnipeg now, Scott Arneal, who was in Columbus, and another one, Davis Payne, who was in St. Louis before. So a chance to work with some really good people in hockey. and learn and develop and have their thoughts and implement my own into the mix also. But also, the game of hockey is the game of hockey. You know, I had head coach experience in the ECHL. My last year there, we went to Game 7 of the Kelly Cup Finals. So being in those pressure situations in this seat, I've been in some different situations like that, so you're used to that. Obviously, the American League, the speed, the execution, is at a different level itself. But a chance to be in those high-pressure situations at the ECHL, then learn from some really good head coaches at the American Hockey League level, and now a chance to implement my own philosophies, beliefs, what it takes to win during the regular season, what it takes, just as importantly, to develop these young players for the Jets. So all of the above has been, it's been a really good year, and was excited to have a chance to finally put my stamp on on a hockey team here again, and the opportunity has been real good. Craig Heisinger, Kevin Cheveldea off the team they put together down here is, first off, real strong character, good people, which is number one, and the second part being a good balance between grit with some sandpaper and skill mixed in there too. So it's been a real pleasure to coach this group.
Coach, obviously a lot of Winnipeg Jets fans are following the St. John's Ice Caps playoff run very closely, and obviously following yourself because you were the assistant coach with the Moose, and watching players like Mark Scheifele and Paul Postma develop and hoping that the Ice Caps go far and eventually win it. But for the fans that, you know, aren't able to, you know, be in St. John's at the Mile One Center, can you describe what the playoff atmosphere is like there?
Well, we've all seen Winnipeg, you know, in the old Winnipeg Arena with the atmosphere, and obviously the atmosphere you guys had there this year was like playoff atmosphere and then some. So it's a smaller scale of what was taking place in Winnipeg. You both have knowledgeable fans in a Canadian market. B, they're very passionate about the game, and the product on the ice is exciting also. So the fans have really embraced the team. I was not having an AHL team here, similar to you guys not having the Jets in Winnipeg for the past 6-7 years here in Newfoundland and Labrador. And now, beginning of the year, excited to have the team back and themselves again enjoying AHL hockey. And now the playoffs, you can tell that they realize the importance and what playoff hockey means. So the game ops people have done a really good job, getting the crowd into the game. And they've taken it and ran with it themselves. So the players have enjoyed it. The electricity is pretty high in the building, and obviously the product executing at a good level helps with that. But it's been a fun first round, and we're looking to obviously play a lot more games here.
Head coach of the St. John's Ice Caps, Keith McCambridge, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Best of luck in the playoffs, and we hope for a long playoff run for the Ice Caps.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Take care. Keith McCambridge, head coach of the St. John's Ice Caps. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to break. When we come back, more on the NHL playoffs.